It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Good morning.
Doing well,
John. John, how are you?
Yeah, I'm John, and okay. We've been you've been talking with Ben, I understand, about elder law and things that affect the quality of life at that particular stage of life.
We have been.
So let's continue that then.
Okay. Last week, Wes talked or took our listeners through the law, if you will, the tidbits, if you will, of qualification of an individual person who might need to qualify for Medicaid for purposes of paying for long-term care in a nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, John, nursing home charges now are anywhere from $5,000 to $7,000 a month.
Very expensive,
and that's just very difficult for most people. Statistically, a lot of folks are not in the nursing home for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe 6 months, maybe 9 months, maybe a year. There are those exceptions where they're there for a very long period of time, many years. But again, that is a financial burden that is very difficult for folks. And we assimilate all of the facts and the circumstances of these families and try to do the best we can to give them the advice as to how they might be able to weather this storm. Now, when there is a couple involved, many times, John, as we can imagine, there's, you know, the husband and the wife. They've been they are married. And they, one of the two of them is in need of nursing skilled care.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The other one is functioning in the home. And that person who's functioning in the home is known as the community spouse. It's what the Medicaid regulations refer to that spouse. Okay. Doesn't matter whether it's the woman or the man, but the bottom line is that they are functioning in the home place. And their loved one, their husband or their wife, is in need of skilled care. And so we want to talk today about how Medicaid looks at those files. And some of the precursors are that, first of all, Medicaid is not going to recognize a prenuptial agreement.
Oh.
And so for our lovebirds that are in their 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s who are considering getting married, I see a lot of these files where folks come in before they get married to discuss their planning. And one of the issues that comes up is the nature of the beast if we get married and how that might apply in the issue of Medicaid qualification or mm-hmm. long-term care
right.
In a nursing home. Because, again, we can do a prenuptial agreement as to many other issues, such as, you know, they were both married before, they have children from a prior marriage, they want all of their assets to go to their respective children. But we are not going to be able to wish away or contract away the Medicaid law. Medicaid will not recognize the contractual prenuptial agreement. That is not going to change, is what I'm saying, the rules that Wes and I are about to talk about.
Oh, okay. All right. Mm.
So the bottom line with that is that all of the assets of husband and wife are countable in the event either one of them has to go into long-term care. So you don't just take the assets of the individual who is needing the care and count those up.
Mm-hmm.
You count them all up. So as Cecil was just saying, you know, if you have, for example, a second marriage, and maybe the husband has minimal assets, okay, but maybe the wife, they just got married, has lots of assets. Well, if the husband needs to go into a care facility, then all of her assets are countable for Medicaid purposes, and those assets will be subject to a spend down, meaning, you know, she would basically have to cover his cost of care unless some planning was done to protect those assets. So I agree with Cecil. We get that question a lot, and it's prudent for folks who are, you know, getting into a second marriage or third marriage situation later on in their years to sit down with someone and you know, have a discussion, an attorney discussion around you know, eligibility issues, Medicaid issues. How is this going to impact me in the event that, that you know, we do get married from a legal perspective?
So. And there's no waiting period or anything like that. If they marry and, 2 weeks later, the man has a stroke or something and, has to.
2 weeks later, 2 minutes later, it doesn't matter.
And so
the law again is also, you know, protects, you know, those folks who are, you know, maybe close to each other, but just not married yet. Maybe they spend time together. Maybe they're thinking about getting married, but they just haven't pulled the trigger yet. So,
you know,
in the same scenario, the spouse's assets, if they weren't married, it's not the spouse anymore, but the lady's assets, under the scenario I just went through, wouldn't be countable at all. So it's an immediate reaction.
So many, John, and this is an important subject. We could really do a program just on this subject, but so many of the rights and the obligations of marriage can be contractually altered by a prenuptial agreement. For instance, the right to qualify as administrator of the estate, the right to file for years allowance, the right to the statutory amount that a spouse is entitled to either by statute or by right to descent. Okay. There are many, many legal rights that arise as a result of a certificate of marriage. And we can alter many of these rights because folks want to alter them in second and third marriages. You know, they want their assets to go back to their respective children and their oldest child to be the executor of their estate.
Right.
They are marrying at this point in their life for companionship and for camaraderie and for love and not necessarily for financial reasons. They've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Wes and I would love to be able to put in the prenuptial that as to Medicaid qualifications, Medicaid will only look at the assets of the husband if he would need to qualify, or only the assets of the wife, because after all, they are agreeing that their assets are going to remain separate and distinct. But Medicaid, once again, will not recognize this contractual provision in a prenuptial agreement. It's a good thing for our listeners to hear. I know it's a bit complicated, but if you have any questions about it, feel free to give us a call at the office and tell us you were listening to the radio program, and I'll be glad to try to explain it in a little bit of a different way.
So am I getting a clear picture here that there is no way – no advice that you can give a couple that in the scenario that you have presented that's going to protect the assets of one or the other of them? The assets in a marriage are going to be considered completely by Medicaid.
They'll be considered, but then we get into the analysis of what planning techniques can be used in order to protect those assets.
Oh,
I think
okay.
that's where we are now in the program.
Right. All right.
It is.
All right. So what happens?
Well, before we discuss that, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and start the process again there and talk about exactly what we can do prior to this event of having to go into a rest home or nursing home, and we'll find out what the process of protecting some assets are. We'll be right back. Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell are in the studio, Collins and Harvell, talking about, now, are you making fun of me? Anyway, the guys are here talking about living in a senior care facility, one that's either a nursing home or a rest home. And the topic's interesting from the standpoint as you consider an individual or maybe even a couple going into a rest home. But we're now talking about one of a couple going into the rest home and the other staying home, and we're trying to protect some assets and make a bad situation better.
Right. Well, you know, John, that's a real situation that people find themselves in. Mm-hmm. And the law really recognizes that, you know, we could certainly have a situation where husband and wife, one of the two ends up having to go into a care facility. The law recognizes that we're $5,000-$6,000 a month in North Carolina for long-term care, nursing home, skilled nursing care. And, you know, that's a devastating expense for a lot of families, most families.
Oh, absolutely.
Almost every family. So, when we're talking about eligibility, as I spoke about last week, what we're doing is we're looking at all the assets of husband and wife, and we have to make sure in order to become eligible for Medicaid that the countable assets, now that's a buzzword, that's an important word, countable, mm-hmm. what's countable, what's not countable, but we have to, get that number, make sure that number of countable assets is less than $2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a low number.
Yeah.
But there are lots of exceptions with regard to the home we can talk about. There's lots of, personal property such as things in the home, jewelry, clothing, furniture, those kind of things are not countable at all. One vehicle is not countable at all. We talked about this last week. But then if we get down to the situation where we have let's say protected the home, and I mentioned that last week, talked about that. So anyone who would like to hear that conversation, maybe we can go over that again, but they could go on the website and click on our show from last week and mm-hmm. hear about that as far as protecting the home. But when we're talking about whatever's left over, you know, let's say that we have $100,000 of countable assets left over, mm-hmm. meaning we've got money in the bank,
mm-hmm.
meaning we've got it could be more than one vehicle. I mean, it could be a lot of things.
Right.
But they end up being, you know, countable assets. The law in North Carolina is that you don't have to spend all of those countable assets down to $2,000 or below $2,000 if you're married and we have one spouse at home and one spouse in the care facility. We apply what's called the Community Spouse Resource Allowance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a number that fluctuates from year to year. The current number for 2013 for the Community Spouse Resource Allowance is $115,920.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what that means is that the community spouse can keep one half of all countable assets up to that number, $115,920. So under our simple scenario of $100,000 of countable assets, what the law would require would be basically that the community spouse, the one who's living in the home, can keep $50,000 basically, and it actually ends up being $52,000 because of there's $2,000 that we have to get under, and then the remaining has to be spent down. So under that scenario, about $48,000 would have to be spent down. And now, so the way that works is if we had $300,000 of countable assets, well, then the community spouse would only be able to keep $115,920. So it's, you get to keep half of all countable, but no more than the $115,920.
Okay.
There's also, that's the top number. There's also a bottom number with regard to the community spouse resource allowance. And that's $23,184. That means that after we spend everything, after we look at all the assets and we see that we've got, let's say $23,184 left in countable assets, there's no further spend down that needs to happen. The community spouse can keep all of that. That's the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know this is a little bit complicated.
Well, what's interesting is you're keeping all those figures in your head with everything else you have to think of.
Well, we deal with this a lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's important for us to keep up with
mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
And so also, you know, with regard to that, the big picture here is that the law recognizes that the Medicaid program is not designed in these type circumstances to leave the community spouse, the healthy spouse, destitute
mm-hmm.
to the point where she can't or he can't pay, you know, her bills,
mm-hmm.
or can't maintain a reasonable station in life, reasonable lifestyle, just because the husband or the wife ended up having to go into a care facility. So there is, you know, provision written into the law that certainly allows that community spouse to be able to, you know, take care of herself financially. So
it sounds like a lot of pitfalls that folks would face in these circumstances, and certainly something worthwhile for them to contact you guys about to help get guidance through the minefield there.
John, now all of what Wes just said is absolutely accurate, but there was a lot of code language in that. We've used the word countable asset.
Mm-hmm.
You know, countable assets of not more than $115,000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, our job for a person who's needing to qualify for Medicaid, the family setting that as their goal, of course, what we are going to do is to place the square pegs in the square holes so that the countable assets, if you will, certain other assets are not therefore countable.
Mm-hmm.
Countable is a word and a term that has to be defined under the Medicaid regulations. And, of course, we've already talked about the fact that one car is not a countable asset.
Mm-hmm.
Other assets that are not considered countable are undivided interest, if you will, in real estate.
Okay.
Okay. So many of our clients, sometimes in order to retain their net worth or a strong portion of their net worth over and beyond, if you will, the $115,000 that the law allows them to keep, mm-hmm. say that there is another $100,000 or $200,000. They are basically advised that the way in which they're able to keep that that resource in their family is to change the nature of it from liquidity to an interest holding in real estate. So, because an interest holding in real estate is not a countable asset if it is structured properly.
Okay, and that's kind of where you come into the picture there, making sure that
yes, it is.
And you mentioned pitfalls. I mean, there's lots of pitfalls with regard to real estate. We're very fortunate to have, you know, an excellent Department of Social Services here in Carteret County and then in the surrounding counties. And they will tell you, all departments of social services will tell you, yes, you can sign an intent to return home and make the home not countable. If the spouse is living in the home, it's a non-countable asset. There are relatively simple ways to make the home not countable, but as we mentioned, pitfalls. Although it seems as though maybe mom or dad or husband or wife are eligible for Medicaid, the home is not countable, everything is smooth sailing. What happens in many cases is that upon the death of the person who's receiving the Medicaid, then there's a right to a state recovery against that home, meaning that the state of North Carolina would have a right to force the sale of the home in order to recover the funds it has paid for the care of the individual. But that is only if proper planning is not put in place. So that's a very important issue that listeners out there need to recognize. And I mentioned this last week. You know, I meet with a lot of people who end up, you know, being eligible for Medicaid because the home is not countable, because the spouse is in the home, or because an intent to return home is signed. But then upon the death, a third-party recovery letter comes in from the Division of Medical Assistance in Raleigh and says, you owe us $150,000. Then we're in a difficult situation in order to get a good result for that person. But if we planned ahead, then we're able to avoid that completely.
Well, we've mentioned that key word planning several times right. This morning. And when we come back from this break, I want to ask you, when should that planning take place, and is it ever too late to plan? Is it too late after the spouse is in the rest home? Let's talk about that when we come back in our remaining moments. We're back, Harvell and Collins, talking about long-term care and how we're going to protect assets in the event of individuals having to go into a rest home. And right now we're talking about the fact that one spouse may have to go and the other stay home. Mm-hmm. When is it too late to start planning to protect some assets?
John, these files come at every conceivable stage. What I mean by that is we certainly have folks that are in our office in their 60s and 70s, 80s, who are in fine health, but who are aware of the possibility of these changes of circumstances medically in their life as they get older, and therefore they take a proactive approach to planning. Now, we have a lot of files like that. We also, of course, have files where the loved one has been in the facility for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
I have a file like this right now in my office. And there was never any planning done, and they have been in there now for 4 or 5 years, this woman's husband, okay? And she has basically been through an enormous sum of money. And finally now, she is seeking some guidance as to what to do with what resources are left. So I've given you the extremities. People who really plan ahead, people who wait, and come in after their loved one has been in the facility for a long time. Then, of course, there's a group of folks, a group of clients who come in at the time that their loved one is told that, you know, your father, your husband is not going to be able to return home. He is in a condition now where we feel as the medical providers, the medical team, the doctor, that he needs long-term care. He needs to be in a skilled care environment where he will receive the necessary medical care that he needs. And as a result of that, they then come in. It's never too late to look at these issues, and it's never too early to look at these issues either. You know, things happen. We see a lot of clients they're tragic situations, John, but in their 40s and 50s with MS, Lou Gehrig's.
Certainly.
Early Alzheimer's, mm-hmm, in the 60s. And of course these folks are in desperate need of the right kind of legal advice.
Right.
I have a lady. She is a wonderful lady. She's my age, basically. She works here at a large, one of our great retail organizations. I've seen her for years when I go to that retail place here in town and buy up, you know, yard supplies and things like that. And her husband has MS, and he's had it now for 15 or 20 years, but he is at the end stage.
Harvell and Collins. That's the place to go for planning for long-term care.